Welcome to Making Your Miles Count podcast. Today we're going to answer some questions that I regularly get from the average owner-operator or even client, and they have a few questions about certain issues that I wanted to address. Subscribing to this channel provides you regular access to professional advice on independent operators. If you want to support us, like, share, and turn on that notification. Is it better to lease or own a highway tractor? Answer, short answer is, if at all possible, own it. Now, I did a complete podcast on this. You can take a look on our website or even on our podcast YouTube channel. It goes for about 30-35 minutes. There's some great examples in there, some of the risk factors you take on with leasing and the like, and how to avoid some of them by owning it. You just have to listen to it once, and I think you're pretty much cured about the question. So that's the first question. What do I do if I can't pay myself salary or non-taxable benefits? What is first? Now, those of you who understand the non-taxable benefit system, which we specialize in both of our software and our firm, an owner-operator gets a salary. We recommend a very low salary, like $1,000 a month. And I know people think, oh my goodness, how in the world can you survive off $1,000 a month? Well, bottom line is, you don't survive off of only $1,000 a month, because you get paid more than just your salary. You get paid in non-taxable benefits, which averages approximately $3,000, sometimes $3,500 in a month, depending on where you go. So the question is let's say you're getting $3,500 for your non-taxable benefits and $1,000 for your salary, but you have a really crappy month. What do? You don't have enough. Maybe you only have $2,000 or $3,000. What are your options? Well, the first thing you do is you actually pay yourself your salary. That's the most important thing, because that, in practice, reflects to Canada Revenue Agency that you're an employee of your own corporation, and that qualifies you for the non-taxable benefits. As a form of priority, you do your salaries, number one. You also pay your source deductions on that salary, which would range about $130, $140, something like that. That has to be paid as well. And then the rest of it, whatever you can afford out of your corporate account, you pay yourself accordingly. Canada Revenue Agency has it's actually a custom section in the Income Tax Act, actually also in the GST Act as well. Can't remember the exact wording on it or the title of it. It's something like small business accommodation. It's not an allowance, but it's small business accommodation, where a lot of the detailed rules associated with businesses, or as they would define it, large businesses, they're not necessarily applied to a small business as they are to a large business. Now, Canada Revenue Agency associates a small business to be anything less than gross of $5 million. So that means that any owner-operator, one, two, even three or four trucks, or for that matter, you're not going to gross over $5 million. You are going to be classified as a small business. So in that case, the stickler rules for abiding by extreme compliance to rules don't necessarily apply. There are some that are very, very important, and that is the source deductions on salaries. So that $135, $140 per month, that has to go in. That's the number one priority, because that's classified as Canada Revenue Agency as money in trust. And money in trust is one of the most highly protected forms of cash that is available in the free world. So it's very, very important to send in your source deductions. That's number one. Then the number two is your salary. Then your number three is your non-taxable benefits and expenses. Especially when you first start as an owner-operator or independent operator, your cash flow, it actually takes a few months to get enough cash flow in there to start meeting all of the requirements. So it's a little nip and tuck for the first month or two. But don't worry about that initially. Just sort of survive a little bit and just work your butt off for the first 3 or 4 months and get a high enough reserve so that you make sure that you're able to meet all of your obligations. That's a very good question, by the way. Get it an awful lot. And especially with new clients, they kind of panic in the first month or so. And that is totally normal. I think almost, oh man, I bet you 80% of all operators out there experience some sort of cash flow questions right at the first few months. The third question is, why can't I expense my truck? I paid for it. Well, I got this question a little while ago from a client. Apparently, he paid his entire truck, and he says, well, why can't I expense it? I completely paid for it. Amortization or depreciation is an accounting term that's very specific and utilized not just from Canada Revenue Agency, but also the world in business. If you buy something for $100,000 and it slowly depreciates over time, the real question is, how fast does it depreciate? And if it does depreciate, at what rate does it go down? It does not go down at the same rate as speed that you actually pay for it. That can be completely different. Canada Revenue Agency doesn't care how fast you pay something down, what your cash outflow is. They care about what's called amortization or depreciation. The typical or average depreciation for a highway tractor is between 30 and 40%. There's two different classifications. Class 10 is 30% and class 16, I believe, is 40%. And generally in the industry, 30% is for individuals who drive single, and 40% is classified for individuals running team. That's not always the application. There is a little bit of flexibility there. But realistically, in the end, everything is accounted for down to the penny. So if you're depreciating something, say 40%, this mindset is, oh, I'm saving taxes. Nobody saves taxes with amortization or depreciation. That's not what you're saving taxes on. You're actually not saving any taxes at all. You're just deferring taxes off into the future. And it's not really even deferring, because realistically, you're actually losing money. Let's say you buy a truck for, like I said, $100,000, and suddenly in 2 years' time, it's suddenly worth $50,000. Well, realistically, and if you sell it at that time, you can declare a $50,000 loss on the purchase of that asset. And you apply those losses, depreciation, to the income that you used to generate money during the time you had that truck. When the truck is disposed of, and only then, is the exact figures assigned to actual depreciation. So the 30% or 40%, those are just numbers that Canada Revenue Agency allows you to use in the interim between the time you buy the truck and sell the truck. In between there, it really doesn't make any difference, because in the end, when you sell that truck, dispose of it, that's when the exact dollar figure is utilized. So if you depreciate that truck $40,000 over 2 years, and then you sell it for $50,000, so you lost another $10,000, well, then you have an additional $10,000 of losses on the disposal of that vehicle. So everything, right from the time you purchase it to the time you sell it, over however many years you own it, it's all calculated down to the penny as to what it is you lost or didn't lose. And so the depreciation number is just an estimate, and you could be wildly out. I give you that an example a while back in a podcast, where a guy bought a truck for $150,000 and then drove it for almost 2 years and then sold it for $180,000. Well, there you actually have capital gains, because you sold it for more than what you bought it for. But let's say, for instance, you buy something for $150,000, drive it for 5 or 6 years, and you depreciate it down to $50,000, but then you turn around and sell it for $75,000. The book value is $50,000, and you sold it for $75,000. The correct terminology for that $25,000 gain is not capital gains. It's called recapture, because you're recapturing some of the depreciation that you utilized during that 5 years of utilizing that truck. So hopefully it's not confusing, other than the fact that every penny is associated with an expense. If you, for whatever purchase price less the sale price, that dollar figure down to the penny, everything is accounted for. taxes or expenses are calculated accordingly? It's a good question, but it is a little bit, shall we say, everybody should understand at least the basic concepts of amortization or depreciation. There is two industries in Canada that do not necessarily have what you would generally call depreciation associated with, and that is farming and fishing. They work on what's called the cash-based system. Cash-based system is directly opposite to the what's called the accrual-based system. Accrual-based system uses depreciation, but cash-based does not. I'll give you an example. Let's say a farmer is harvesting his grain, and all of a sudden he sees, oh my goodness, I got $1 million worth of income here. Let's say he sells it all, and he says, well, I don't have any grain in my bins, but I got $1 million worth of cash in my account. Well, what does he do? Well, he could pay taxes on that $1 million, or if before December 31st, he says, you know what, I'm going to buy a new tractor, put up a pole shed, I'm going to do this, and he spends, say, $800,000 on equipment upgrading and the like, then he actually only has to pay taxes on $200,000. And that concept, that example, is the cash-based system. And it can, like I said, it can only be used in two industries, the fishing industry and the farming industry. Canada Revenue Agency does not like the combination of those two under one corporation. So if you have a farming business where you're doing farming and you're utilizing cash-based accounting, and then you at the same time buy a highway tractor or two or something like that, and you combine both businesses so that you utilize cash based on both, they used to do that 20 years ago until Canada Revenue Agency got a little bit ticked at it, and they said, no, you can't, you have to separate the two businesses. So it's very risky to do that. I've advised people many times to stop doing that, because it does create a huge flag, lots of penalties and interest in there. So you want to avoid that. Question number four, big one here. This one always comes around Christmas time. Can I expense alcohol to dispatchers or Tim Hortons cards for Christmas gifts and stuff like this? The short answer is yes, but there are quite a bit of restrictions on that. A number of years ago, this would be about 15, 18 years ago, almost 20 years ago now, the Canada Revenue Agency had a different system out there where it had to do with a dollar figure and what you can give as a gift and stuff like that. It's no longer based exclusively on dollar figure. It has to do now with two different systems. I'll give you an example. There's two types of gifts that you can give. One is monetarily valued and the other is not monetarily valued. A non-monetarily valued gift would be an example of a 26 of a Jack Daniels. So I don't know what the cost of that is, well, $50, $80, whatever it is. If you give that out to a dispatcher, you can do it, and it's an expense to your corporation. Now, on the receipt, you have to show the name of the person that you gave it to. It's actually a good idea to have their social insurance number if you can on there, but different accounting firms have different rules associated with it. Some go really heavy into all the prescribed regulations for it and stuff like this. The general idea is you put the name on there. Phone number is should be fine too as well, but that's pretty much it. It's not so much the actual contact information as much as it is how often do you do this. If you go out and buy Jack Daniels twice a month and you give away that away, that's probably going to end up being a flag on an audit. An auditor has an awful lot of autonomy. They can determine whether something is abusive or whether it is not, and then it's up to you to defend yourself on it. If you give away two or three in a year, probably that would be acceptable, because it's under $500, for instance. That's an example of something that is non-monetary in basis, even though it has a dollar figure less than $500. I'm gonna have to go back and forth in my logic here, but as an example, but a Tim Hortons card, a $10 Tim Hortons card is of monetary value. Even though it's not cash, it has monetary value associated with it. And that is actually taxable to the individual that you give to. And yes, you can use it as an expense, but you have to put the name and the phone contact number associated with that. If you don't, then it can't be used as an expense. There's nothing that anybody can do to avoid that. Now, when it comes to going back to the non-monetary gifts, you can actually give away something for less than $500 and it not be taxable to the recipient, and it's a tax expense to your corporation. $500. So $499 is fine. That's why I see a lot of companies giving away like $499 barbecues and stuff like that. There's a fair bit of that. Now, there are some restrictions that some auditors actually apply to that. Number one, you can't just give the, $500 gifts to anybody and every with no recourse, no question or anything at all on there. It has to be at an awards event. At least that's the implication from auditors, that it has to be specifically given, shouldn't say auctioned off, but like what do you call those things with little numbers on there, and you pull it out and you win. It's a raffle or whatever it is. It's either drawn from a draw from door prizes. That's what they call it, like door prizes. It has to be something or an awards for something that you achieved during the year, that kind of thing. So it has to be associated with something and a particular day, a particular event, and the like. So that's the restrictions on non-monetary based rewards or gifts, so to speak. It is a good question. Vast majority of people don't utilize it, and it's not a huge factor unless people start abusing it. When people start using it too much, and we had a client that was using it probably, I guess, twice a week. My guess is Jack Daniels, a lot of alcohol. And we actually had to contact them and said, you know what? We love to do this, because technically you can do this. But when it comes to tax savings, how much are you actually saving on it? You're spending probably $1,200-$1,500 a year. And what are you actually saving in taxes? Maybe $500, something like that. When you do something extreme in one area in your business or corporation, an auditor can look at it and say, okay, well, if he's doing extreme there, there's going to be extreme in a whole bunch of other areas. So realistically, they could say, well, then this is extreme. It opens up a sort of a Pandora's box where you can't close it, and realistically makes you vulnerable. Why would you risk using a phenomenal system like the non-taxable benefit system, which saves you $12,000, $13,000 a year in taxes, just so that you can utilize alcohol receipts, a couple times a month or something like that? You're putting at risk something that is really, you should be focusing on the things that are much better defendable than something that is not. Because oftentimes, we even went through it. There was one guy who was, like I said, was doing Jack Daniels a couple times a month. He didn't really have the money to be doing that, because he wasn't making a whole lot of money. He didn't need the expenses. Some of it he did, but not a whole lot in his business. So realistically, why was he doing this? Was it really to a dispatcher? There are some gray areas there that we try and navigate as best as we can. We promote the non-taxable benefits of meal allowances and personal vehicle log. Those are the meat and potatoes. That's what saves you phenomenal taxes. And we have clients who've saved collectively $200, $250, sometimes $300,000 during the entire tenure as our clients. And those make the big difference. They have been with us for 10, 15 years or longer. And realistically, that total, they pretty much paid for their house with non-taxable benefits. And that's what gets me excited, is realistically changing your life by non-taxable benefits. It's the greatest system in the world for independent operators. And realistically, I don't want to put anything else at risk just because, you know, I don't want to nickel and dime something that is absolutely the greatest thing in the world. So anyway, those are those four questions, questions by clients. By the way, if you have any questions, you want to email me, r.scaper@makingyourmilescount.com, and give me some questions. I'll answer it in our podcast and help you out if at all possible. Other than that, have a great trip. Bye-bye.
Thanks for stopping by Making Your Miles Count. For further Making Your Miles Count productions, call us at 877-987-9787 or download us at makingyourmilescount.com.